Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler. I'm your interim host once again as Callan has to take the day off, but no worries. We still got Rick here, Pitcherless bullpen expert. Rick, how you doing today?
Doing well. You know, just another September getting ready for fantasy playoffs and baseball MLB playoffs. So a lot to be excited for.
Definitely. The season's winding down. We're finally getting close to figuring out who's going to be the champion in each of our fantasy leagues. For me, that is an unfortunate bit of news. For others, I'm sure they're excited to get a big trophy at the end of the season, or at least a little bit of money from their friends or league mates that they're playing against. So it's an exciting time of year, especially in those really tight races. But this is a bullpen podcast. As always, we'll be talking about relievers. And we always start the show off by covering Rick's article, Closing Time, where he ranks the top 30 closers around baseball. And we'll begin it with the three closers that are moving up your list this week. And this week, it's Pete Fairbanks, Jose Leclerc, and Matt Barnes. Go ahead and tell me why you got Pete Fairbanks moving up this week.
Yeah, so it looks like He and Jason Adam have basically been kind of in my mind splitting the role, but Fairbanks has the edge in saves over the past 3 weeks, and he's clearly the 1A option, I guess, right now. So, and he's just been basically unhittable since, you know, August, since past the All-Star break. So he's really, you know, taken an extra step this year to become, well, when healthy, an elite, you know, reliever. And I think, you know, it's Tampa Bay, so you're never going to count on him to get the 100% of the save chances. But if he's getting, say, 60 to 70% of the save chances, then he's certainly in that top, like, 10 to 12 range discussion, I think.
Yeah, he's not only pitched a lot better than last year, but the underlying skills also show that he's basically like a completely different pitcher. Maybe not completely different. He's got the same pitch mix, but he added in a mile and a half per hour. I see why people struggle with that. To his fastball, it's up to 99 miles per hour now on average. And he's also striking out 41% of batters. So he's definitely one of the most elite arms in Tampa Bay, which has a litany of really impressive arms out there. So it's fair that he's starting to take away some of those save opportunities from Adam. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like next year as well. Moving to the AL West, Jose Leclerc, who we talked about a lot last week as a guy to go out and pick up because he seemed to be the next man up after Jonathan Hernandez was sort of falling off. Is that why you got Leclerc moving up this week? Because he's sort of solidifying himself out there in Texas?
Yeah, it looks like he's the guy. They finally kind of settled on him as the closer for now, and I don't see any reason why he can't just kind of take that role and run with it for the rest of the season. You know, one ERA under two and a whip under one since the All-Star break, 17.2% swing and strike rate. He's always had a good swing and strike rate number. That's always kind of been why I've never quite given up on him. But, you know, you have 30.3% K rate. So, yeah, he's everything you kind of look for when it comes to rostering a closer, and he's, you know, looks to be the guy. Matt Moore still pitching well, but I don't think he has any saves recently. So with Fernandez kind of falling out, it looks like it's Leclerc's job to lose.
It's nice that they've sort of got a three-headed bullpen monster out there, but unfortunately they've not been too competitive as a team as a whole. So it's not led to too much, you know, fantasy impact because they don't get too many save opportunities. But yeah, it does seem like Leclerc is the go-to guy there. I have picked him up in a couple of leagues. And the last guy moving up your list is Matt Barnes. Is it April again?
I feel weird about this, but I think the Red Sox have kind of showed in the last week or so that they're going to kind of roll with Barnes in the closer role. And I think it makes sense. Like, you want to see, if you can get some confidence in him, you know, for the rest of the season heading into next year, because they owe him, I think it's like $8.5 million, something around $8.5 million. And, you know, Whitlock's been a little bit, I think Whitlock probably is a little fatigued at this point of the year, bouncing between the starter role and the relief role, kind of, I'm sure it took a toll. And then, you know, Schreiber as well isn't really used to this kind of workload in his mm-hmm. past. So I think, you know, with them being out of the playoffs, they're going to see what Barnes can give them in the ninth inning. And I don't, yeah, he's been better, but I still don't, still not Matt Barnes from, you know, a year or 2 years ago where he was almost close to being a, you know, a guaranteed, you know, save when he came in or a hold, whatever role he was in. But yeah, I guess if you're the Red Sox closer, even on a Red Sox team that's, you know, under 500 right now, it's still something to consider, someone to consider rostering for those of you desperate for saves. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, there are much worse closer options out there on worse teams, that's for sure. Yeah. But I think it's definitely a good point to talk about his salary, because I think not only would they want him to have a major role in the bullpen, especially going into next season, but I think there's also a chance they look to trade him, especially going into his last season with the team, that it's sort of important that he shows some semblance of his past self if they try to trade him this offseason or, you know, at next year's trade deadline. And if he continues to look how he did in the first half, there's no way anybody's going to take him. So they really need to turn him around a little bit if they want to turn him into at least somewhat of a trade chip, like one minor leaguer. You know, right now he's like, you're getting a bag of peanuts.
You're not getting anything. Yeah
for sure. But yeah, Whitlock's definitely super tax right now. Definitely 77 innings pitched. How many did he throw last year? Let's find out. He threw 73. All right. So he's just passed his career high. It seems like actually he threw 110 with the Yankees in 2018, 120 actually in the minor leagues, but that was 4 years ago. So yeah, you can definitely say he's getting a little taxed now. It's been a long season for the Red Sox, and Whitlock, like you said, switched between roles. And I'm sure that has a larger impact on your arm than is able to be, you know, monitored in a way, able to be calculated. But yeah, that's the three guys moving up: Fairbanks, Leclerc, and Barnes. So now we'll hit the three guys moving down your list this week. We've got Kenley Jansen, Tanner Scott, and Kyle Finnegan. Those are all NL East teams. Do you have a vendetta against them?
I guess there's just a lot of, outside of, you know, two of those teams just have not been competitive. And then Jansen this is like his third week on this list. So yeah. Jansen's the one that's obviously the most concerning, I suppose, because this is not what we've come to expect from him. And I don't know if there's been any recent news, but it sounds like they're going to try to stick with him in the role, even though Raisel Iglesias has been phenomenal for them since they traded for him. So it looks like Jansen still has the job for now, but it's definitely becoming a concern with how poorly he's pitched over the second half. And, you know, especially when you just look at his numbers from August to September, it's not really pretty.
Yeah, I think he's just lost the feel for his pitches or something. Not only does he have an ERA above 4.4, but he's got a 22-11 strikeout to walk ratio, which isn't absolutely horrible. But when you compare it to his first half, he has three more walks in the second half, which is half as many innings as he threw in the first half. So he has eight walks in 35 innings in the first half and 11 in 18 innings in the second half. So it's he's definitely not able to locate his pitches. And that sort of, let's see, did his walk rate rise? His walk rate, yes, rose 8%. So there it is. There you have it. He's not throwing the ball in the zone, or people aren't chasing. It's definitely seems to be a problem. Let's hope the Braves can figure out what's going on before they hit the playoffs. But yeah, that's definitely something concerning, especially going into the final weeks of the season, because not only does it give them an excuse to rest him because of performance, but also, you know, he's 34 years old. He's been pitching for a long time. They don't really have a reason to push him too hard because they're pretty locked into a playoff spot. So it'll really be interesting to see if they do go to Raisel.
The only thing is, well, yeah, I think Iglesias might be their best option right now. And if they're trying to win the NL East, which, I mean, that gives you, I don't know how the seeding really works out, but I'm sure that that's definitely the priority, is winning the NL East. So if they're pushing the Mets right now, they might want to make the switch. But I know Jansen had said something. I think he had commented that it's a mechanical thing, which is one of those, like, that could be, you know, fixed shortly, that could take it some time to fix. So it's really, if they've, you know, diagnosed this as some sort of mechanical flaw, then, you know, it's really, you never really know how long that's going to take for a pitcher to kind of figure out.
Definitely. We saw that with Hader saying that it was a mechanical thing that led to his release point being off. And we saw how long he struggled with that. So that's really disappointing. With Scott, who do you see replacing him, if anybody, right now? Because he literally hasn't gotten a save since August.
Yeah, he I mean, I guess the same like with Finnegan. They've kind of just disappeared lately. And I think Dylan Floro has a save, maybe two saves over the past in the month of September. But Floro's not someone that I'm like running out to add or get excited about. He's saved games for them in the past. He's been fine. He's solid. He induces weak contact, but not a big strikeout guy. You know, he works for, I guess, for that team in that ballpark with his, you know, fly ball proneness, I guess. But yeah, I think it's him maybe for the rest of the year, but again, not someone you're adding outside of really deep leagues or leagues where you really need to catch up on saves.
Definitely. And what about in Washington? Are you looking at Hunter Harvey or like someone like Carl Edwards Jr. who has more saves than Harvey, who hasn't gotten one this season?
I don't know, because they haven't really, it's like how many saves do they have as a team in September? It's obviously this Nationals team isn't really thriving at the moment. So I guess I really, again, you don't really need to roster anyone here. If you want to take a shot on someone, I don't think I would like to see Harvey have a, you know, get some run as the closer, but they'll probably go to, I would guess they'd go to Edwards first. But again, I don't. Yeah, none of them have a save in September.
Yeah, looks like they're tied with the Twins for the fewest saves in all of baseball at 25.
The Twins only have 20. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that surprised me as well.
Yeah.
Because they are sandwiched in between the Reds and the Nationals, and that makes complete sense. But
yeah,
the Twins, there's one team that doesn't belong there. Yeah, it's like a bunch of really bad teams in that bottom 10, and then the Twins are just down there. I don't know. Where, yeah, that's really weird. They must just be either blowing teams out or getting blown out.
Yeah, and I mean, that's been another spot where it's been kind of hit or miss all year and trying to figure out who's closing out games for them. So, yeah, I guess in Washington, though, I think Finnegan's droppable, and if you want to add someone, I don't know who to recommend between Edwards or Harvey, but
probably the guy that you think is the better pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, Harvey's pitched really well. His velocities look great, and I just, you know, I want to see a full season from him being healthy, but Edwards has been good as well. I guess if you have to add someone, I would say I'll say Hunter Harvey. I'm gonna go with Hunter Harvey. I know he got blown up a little bit in his last outing, but there's been some like really, that's like a little like promising piece to that team this year. It's been him in the bullpen the second half of the season. So, you know, they kind of hit gold with Tanner Rainey for a minute, so maybe Hunter Harvey's their next guy, who, you know, big time velocity with pretty good off speed stuff. So yeah, he struggled recently, but I that might not give him a chance. But yeah, I think between Harvey and Edwards, I would say why not Harvey.
Yeah, and when Rainey went down, I think we were both in the same boat in saying that Finnegan really wasn't worth it to pick up, because he's not only not overpowering, but the Nationals aren't great. And that sort of played out how we thought it would. So maybe Hunter Harvey isn't even too great of a choice either, just because the Nationals are so bad. Like we said, they have the fewest saves in all of baseball tied with the Twins. So there's not really too many opportunities going around there. And if it's going to be split between three guys and a couple of them aren't too great, then it's probably not the best situation to be chasing in terms of fantasy, especially if you're super desperate for saves. It still might not even be the best opportunity because they can hurt your ratios.
For sure.
Yeah, well, let's move on to some news that's going around the league. We got an elite closer returning from the IL. That would be Ryan Pressly of the Houston Astros. Do you have anything in particular to say about him, or are we just letting everybody know if they didn't to remove him from their ILs?
Well, yeah, I think it was last week we talked about him and how the Astros kind of are in a position where they could kind of delay his return a little bit. They brought him back like a day or two after that, after we did the podcast. So, and he's looked great since he's been back. So yeah, he's, you know, ready to go. You can drop Rafael Montero, it looks like, and Hector Neris, and just, you know, that's pretty much it for Houston, I think.
Definitely. I've loved what Presley's been doing all year. I love doing game logs just from a certain date, and he allowed 4 runs on the 23rd. I feel like I've done this in like each of the last 3 times we talked about him or whatever, but he's allowed 5 earned runs across his last 21 innings pitch for a 2.08 ERA since June 25th. So been really solid. A 38-1 strikeout to walk ratio. Holy moly. That's insane. All right. Yeah. He's back. And, when is he a free agent? He is a free agent next year. So that will actually,
I think they gave him an extension.
Wrong. Yeah. They have that's really weird. Fangraphs says free agent 2023, but they have
a little extension next to it.
Another extension next to it. That's very weird. Okay. Yeah. So actually he'll be in Houston the next 2 years. He is going to be a top tier fantasy closing option for at least the next couple of years because the Astros are just so freaking good.
Yeah, he's going to be 34 next year, but there's really no signs of him slowing down. I know there was some concerns with his velo dropping a little bit the last, you know, 2 years, but it hasn't affected him. He's kind of like the king of spin rate, you know, 100 percentile for curveball spin, 97th percentile fastball spin, and, you know, it's getting it done.
It was pretty crazy when the Astros swooped him from the Twins. I didn't really expect much to come of that, but since then he's really just been so incredible. So definitely a guy you can rely upon and slot back into your fantasy lineups. In other news, Sir Anthony Dominguez returned for the Philadelphia Phillies, but David Robertson's still closing. We were talking about this last week because when David Robertson was acquired at the trade deadline from the Cubs by the Phillies, interim manager Rob Thompson had said that they would go with the closing committee, and then he just used Sir Anthony Dominguez the whole time. So that really, he lied to us. I feel so cheated by him. I can't believe he did that. But anyway, then Sir Anthony hit the IL and Robertson was getting all the saves. So now it seems like it's switched back and now they're just trusting Robertson. And I think it's got to be sort of the Sir Anthony is 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. He was already dealing with an injury. They don't want to push him. I think they're on track to make the playoffs. So there's no reason for them to push him when they could really rely on him this year and into the future, because David Robertson is a free agent at the end of this season. So they might as well ride it till the wheels fall off. Do you have any thoughts on the closing situation in Philadelphia?
I guess as long as Robertson's getting the job done, yeah, go with it. And then you have what's turned out to be two elite setup men and Sir Anthony Dominguez and Jose Alvarado, who are, Dominguez is throwing 99 from the right side and Alvarado 99 from the left side right before Robertson comes in. So, yeah, it's a sneaky. I mean, I think the Phillies are kind of a sneaky team in the playoffs if the lineup gets hot. You know, they have Wheeler and Nola as long as they're healthy, and then the bullpen can be, you know, good from the 6th, 7th inning on. So, but yeah, Dominguez, I mean, we were talking about some guys who would, you know, their velocities have been up lately, and his last outing for Sir Anthony Dominguez, his fastball was up 1.3 miles per hour up to 98.7. So if he's staying around there, he's going to be very tough to handle for hitters.
Interesting. I did not hear about that. That's definitely something to note. Definitely something to look at going into next season, because he was an elite fastball velocity guy before he got injured, and he didn't really come back with the same velocity. I was tracking that in the early editions of the reliever rank, so it's pretty interesting to see that he's, you know, gaining that velocity back. Maybe he just needed that little bit of break to get back there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. And, you know, coming back for the last, you know, end of September playoff push, maybe he's just amping it up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on, especially going into the offseason. I know some crazy people will draft in November, but we're not even quite there yet. So still got some time to make your mind up about who you'd like to draft there. But, you know, the Phillies can always add somebody in the offseason.
Yeah, they'll probably spend some money there.
Yeah. So, pretty crazy. They've always been a bullpen graveyard. So nice to see them finally get rid of that narrative. But
yeah,
let's move on to the main event of the evening. We're going to be talking about relief pitcher underperformers, guys who have not pitched well this year, but have shown the ability to pitch better than how they have performed. But before we do that, we're going to hit a quick break. And we're back. Welcome back to In the Pen Podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm Jake Crumpler, as always, joined by Rick Graham. We are hitting some underperforming relief pitchers throughout the season. We're in that part of the year where you can start looking back on the season, sort of taking season-long numbers for what they are at this point. You know, it's a little bit too late, too small sample sizes for pitchers to be turning around. But I'll preface this section before we start getting into the pitchers themselves, getting into the thick of things. I do love myself some prefaces. But yeah, so I came up with this idea. I know, Rick, you were thinking of overperformers. This is a little more on the positive side, but we may hit overperformers next time unless we come up with something else. But so this is definitely an interesting subject, because there's a lot of ways to look at this. Obviously, you want to find guys that have high ERAs, because that's how they actually perform. So you find guys with ERAs over 4, and then you can look at a multitude of things, whether that be whip, like in a very rudimentary way, like this guy's not allowing a lot of base runners, but he's allowing a lot of runs. That's sort of not correlating there. But then you can also look at ERA estimators like Sierra or XFIP or FIP, XERA. Some of those are more telling than others, but you know, it's important to take a look at everything like that. And then you can also look at HOTEL, which is Pitcherlist's acronym for the luck factors in baseball, the Holy Trinity of equating luck. I think I got that right.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like home run to fly ball rate, BABIP, and left on base percentage. Those are always very interesting to look at. So we'll be looking at a lot of pitchers from those angles. I think strikeout to walk ratio is also a really good one, because that's normally one of the best indicators of how good a pitcher actually is, are they giving up free passes and are they striking guys out? And so we're going to compare those. But yeah, we've got, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We got like 10 names to go through. So we'll give you some guys to keep an eye out for next season, maybe even the last couple of weeks of the season. If they've shown these skills, you know, they can already start turning around, but definitely this can be used right now and also going into next season. So it'll be interesting to see if this starts turning around before we hit the season break. But we'll start out with a guy who has switched teams. That's Lou Trevino. He was on the A's to start the season. I mentioned him throughout the year as a guy to go pick up, and his luck turned around a little bit, but not too much. He seemed to be having one of his better seasons, and just the ERA was not reflecting that. It's at 4.79 on the season, and now he's pitching for the Yankees. So what are you thinking that's holding Lou Trevino back this season?
That's a good question. So, I mean, obviously the 400, he's got a BABIP of 400. That's
holy moly.
Like, A, he's the only reliever over 400 or 400. So yeah, that leads the league, or like, is it leads the league or last? I guess leads the league in BABIP.
yeah. Not a league leader you want to be.
No. So obviously there's a lot of bad luck there, but there are some positives to take away from this. And I think, you know, the Yankees are a good organization to turn pitchers into good relievers. So someone to definitely keep an eye on next year. after a full season with this, with the Yankees organization, as long as he stays there. You know, 32 innings pitched, but he's got 45 strikeouts. I know you've mentioned it before when we were talking about him in Oakland, and he's missing bats at like his highest rate of his career. And you know, the BABIP might be, the hard hit rate's not great. It's, you know, third percentile hard hit rate, but that's still like 400 BABIP's just not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen again. And even with just, if that comes down to closer to 300, which is still pretty high, that still, you know, brings his ERA, WHIP, all that down. And with the strikeout numbers, definitely something, someone kind of interesting to keep an eye on for next year.
For sure. I've been touting him as a guy that's going to turn it around all season. I am trying to see if he's going to be a free agent. No, he'll be with the Yankees.
Yeah,
for the next two seasons after this year. So he will be interesting to watch going into next season, because I think if he can maintain these skills, he can actually be pretty solid. He doesn't really overwhelm with his pitches or anything, but you know, like you said, the way that he has been pitching is a step up from years past. I think he's got the lowest xFIP of his career.
Yeah, he's added a slider this year that's been really good, getting whiff rates at 49.3%. All the X stats for that pitch have been great. So, you know, especially knowing like the Yankees are going to probably just turn him into a sinker slider guy. And I think he could really kind of thrive in that role. I'm kind of interested to see how he changes next year with his pitch repertoire and everything with a full year in New York.
Yeah, maybe he leans into that slider even more. It's got some of the best horizontal movement in all of baseball. It looks like 15th among relievers in horizontal movement. So that's pretty interesting on that point. That's a good call there. But another guy who started out as a closer, similar to Trevino, is Emilio Pagan. He started out as the closer for the Twins and quickly lost hold of that role because he just gave up so many home runs. But there may be some silver lining to all those home runs, because it may be a result of bad luck. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a 20% home run to fly ball rate's definitely high. I think there was only maybe four guys ahead of him as far as that goes. And yeah, he's kind of been a big fly ball pitcher. So it's not crazy, you know. I guess that a year like this was bound to happen, where if all you're allowing, you know, last year's ground ball rate was 23%. The year before was 29%. Ironically, this year it's at 41%, the highest ground ball rate of his career. But yeah, anytime the ball's in the air, it's. I mean, he's kind of a home run machine, and he still gets a lot of swings and misses, and he still has like on the surface good stuff. And I just wonder, there's probably like a little tweak. I don't know if it's, just a change in his repertoire, if he needs to start, you know, if he needs to kind of tunnel his pitches better, or I don't know. I'm not really sure what the change is, but I still think there could be a potential, you know, I guess second breakout for him, even at this point in his career.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I'm interested to see where I don't know what his status is as far as free agency. I think he might still be with Minnesota next year, but it'll be interesting to see.
He's got one more season, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting to see where he kind of lands in that bullpen with, you know, kind of a lot of question marks as far as what roles will be next year in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jorge Lopez will still be around next year too, right?
Yeah, he's still under team control. Duran, they lose Fulmer. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should be pretty interesting. It's definitely worth it to point out that Pagan's xFIP this year is 3.42. And if y'all remember, 2019 was his breakout season with the Rays, where he had a 2.31 ERA across 70 innings. He had a 3.7 xFIP in that season, and that's 0.05 points lower. So that's he seems to be pitching to that same sort of level, and he's just been super unlucky in the home run to fly ball department. It looks like he's got the fifth worst home run to fly ball percentage amongst pitchers with at least 55 innings pitched.
It looks like it's if you look kind of at his heat map for his four seamer, he's kind of just right in the middle of the zone, which is not where you want that to be, I think.
Is it?
I mean, it looks like he could do a little bit. It looks like he could do a little bit better job of elevating. Or he's a straight four seam guy. He's not really a sinker baller, as the ground ball rates show. So maybe he just needs to be better at elevating his fastball. And you know, the splitter came around this year and was solid for him as I guess it became his second pitch. He leaned on that more than the cutter. So, I think there's still pieces here for him to. Be a real good reliever again, but definitely gonna need some tweaks to get there.
Definitely, yeah, it's gonna need to keep the ball in the yard, and maybe he just gets help from pitching in all of these pitcher friendly ballparks in the AL Central some more. But we'll see. The schedule next year turns into more of a balanced schedule where you're facing a bunch of other teams more, so that might hurt him even a little bit more. But yeah, like you said, maybe it's a thing about pitch placement and stuff, but he's definitely shown that he has been unlucky on his balls that do end up in the air. It, like you said, it's so weird that he's getting more ground balls than ever, and yet the little amount of fly balls that he's allowing are all leaving the park. Very weird.
Yeah.
Sticking in the AL Central, Joe Kelly of the White Sox, he hasn't really had a full season compared to everyone else. He's only tossed 31 innings this year, but he's been really unlucky in that short sample size. What has stuck out to you in terms of his bad luck?
Yeah, with Kelly, it's been a little bit of everything, but 58.9% left on base, that definitely sticks out. And he's definitely performed better than his numbers, his overall numbers appear. Let's see, 6.82 ERA, 1.67 WHIP, or, you know, not great, but
no.
Again, as we talk, we've kind of like, and similar with Trevino, he's still striking out guys at a high rate. He's done a great job with his sinker and a curveball have been solid. It's just about, you know, getting better luck. And, you know, it left on base is kind of an interesting thing because I guess it depends on your teammate, the rest of your team. And that White Sox bullpen has been they spent so much money on Kelly and Graveman. And Graveman's been fine, but it's the bullpen overall has been very hit or miss, you know, outside of really Hendricks. I think a full season of and he's been hurt, you know, off and on all year. So like a full season of health, I still think Joe Kelly could be a, you know, solid, you know, help to you. And if anyone's in holds leagues for next season.
I totally agree. And even just looking at a few other metrics, not even luck based ones, he's got a super high ground ball rate, which is something, you know, he's sort of known for because he throws a lot of curve balls and sinkers, but he's got the fifth highest ground ball rate amongst relievers at 68%. That's pretty impressive. And then he's also somehow striking out more batters than he ever has. He's up to, 28.7% on the strikeout rate. That's a career high. So you're getting the most ground balls ever and the most strikeouts ever, yet you're having the worst
season, yeah.
season of your career. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, and it really all plays out in the ERA versus XFIP. It's a 3.3 point difference between his ERA and XFIP, and that's sort of, you know, tells the whole story. Like, this guy has been super unlucky, and so that's definitely a result of small sample sizes, which is, you know, the biggest point about talking about this is that relievers are just going to be hurt by such a small sample size. You can just get unlucky across, you know, 30 innings and that's your whole season. And it doesn't, you don't have enough time for it to turn around. For starters, you're throwing 150 to 200 innings. You have time for your luck metrics to start to play out and for your skills to shine through, but that's not the case for relievers. And so that's why there is so much variability and so much volatility in relief pitching performance from year to year, because you'll just have a guy that goes off one year, whether that be because of luck or because of skills, and then it's hard to tell what's going to happen the next year, because not only can luck change, but also the skills can change. So it's definitely I don't want to say a fool's errand, even though that's a fun thing to say. I don't get to say often, but it's definitely a hard game to play. It's not something you want to be placing your money on, which is something that we as fantasy baseball managers do. So maybe we are the fools, but yeah, it's a
Yeah, I think the only other thing with Kelly is that the walk rate still bugs me. It's a little high. It's
definitely
14%. But like other than that, like yeah, his BABIP's 70 points higher than his career average, and like he's had a long career, so that's that career average is pretty. You know, you kind of use that information. So I feel like yeah, it's just a really unlucky season for him, and probably someone you can get a discount next year.
All right, yeah. And now the biggest underperformer, probably the one everybody's been waiting for, the main event of the evening, Josh Hader of the San Diego Padres has just been super unlucky all season long. And I'm actually not all season long. He started off really well and then just, I don't know, must have just had the worst bout of luck out of anyone. It might, you can't really blame it all on luck, but it's been a rough season for the left-handed closer, who's now in San Diego. What do you think is the biggest factor that has led to him underperforming, and what gives you hope that he's going to turn it around next season?
Well, I mean, I guess the stats for him are kind of different because it's been like a tale of two halves. And I think we got to take into account, like we said with Jansen, it's been a mechanical issue of Hader. He has been, his last outing was better. He's getting better. Feel like it's trending in the right directions. Two strikeouts, two times out, and then three strikeouts his last time out. So getting there, you know, there's probably the craziest. I mean, 27.3% K to walk rate is typically, you know, we're talking about like top, you know, 10 in the league for relievers, and not someone with a 4-point, you know, something ERA. So I think, I don't know what kind of discount this is going to bring next year. I'm curious to see. I typically am not someone who's in on Josh Hader. I usually, you know, wait till the second tier. Like this year it was like, you know, the Presley, Diaz, Romano, Iglesias guys I was kind of after. And I wonder if Hader, I'm guessing he's not going to be the first reliever off the board next year. It's probably going to be Edwin Diaz. But if Hader drops to be like, if he becomes like the fourth or fifth, I don't know if he's going to drop that far, then I think I'm all in on him next year with, you know, pitching in San Diego for, they're still going to be a good team. They're going to win a lot of games. You know, set to be a free agent. Typically, I feel like that. You know, let's see Edwin Diaz this year, Aaron Judge, the type of seasons those guys are having, you know, set to get right before they're about to get paid. So I think I'm really, really in on Hader next year, especially if there's a nice discount.
Definitely. I totally agree. Would love for there to be a discount on Hader because yeah. I will be jumping right on in. I think it's important to note that his strikeout to walk ratio is boosted by that first half where it was nearly 33%. Mm-hmm. It's down to 17.5% in the second half. So that's definitely something to watch. But also it comes with a 444 BABIP in the second half. So he's definitely been unlucky in other terms, as well as, you know, having great underlying skills. And he's always been a guy that you can count on as one of the best closers in baseball. He still, even despite all the struggles, has 32 saves, which is, you know, five off of his career high. It's just incredible what he did in the first half, and that it's just completely changed course in the second half.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. But, you know, I think that there's still a lot. I don't know. I'm still kind of thinking he has a big September, the way, you know, his last two outings have gone. If he has if they make it to the first or the second round of the playoffs, that's a good playoffs, a good postseason run. I feel like there's not going to be a discount just based off mm-hmm. A, the name, and B, you know, it looks like the strikeouts are back. So that's the big thing. And then, you know, once he stops walking guys at a crazy rate, then, you know, I think everything will kind of fall into place for him. So, I honestly don't think there's going to be a discount, but again, if there is, then I'm definitely intrigued for him next year. I think, mm-hmm. you know, I've talked about it before with him. He's always had weirdly bad Augusts, and this was just like the worst August of them all. And it started in July too. So it's not really fair to just say it was a bad August, but he's always been bad in August and then turns it around in September. So it seems like it's just been like a bigger, blow up than usual for him in this year. So I'm at this point not too concerned with him moving forward.
Yeah, I think it would be a nice trade-off, though, that even if you sort of lose some of the discount, if he performs well in the playoffs or through these last couple weeks of the season, that you sort of gain some confidence in him back, too. So I think it's sort of a fair enough trade-off that if you see him get back to his usual self. But yeah, he'll have a whole offseason to, you know, fix his mechanical issues. He's still got one more season in San Diego, so maybe he just needs to get used to his new surroundings. That could be another thing. Definitely. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how strong he looks in spring training and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't think either of us have lost faith in Hader, because it did just seem like a really long cold streak, which is bound to happen. Like I said, small sample sizes, you know, you give up 6 earned runs in a couple outings and things are going to look terrible.
Literally 2 outings of 6 earned runs, 2 outings of 3 earned runs. And yeah, that's like kind of it.
Yeah,
that'll do it to you.
Exactly. Yeah. That'll do it. So yeah, so we go from one JH to another JH. This one, Jordan Hicks. Look at that transition. Oh my God. Jordan Hicks, another fireballer from the St. Louis Cardinals. They seem to have a couple of those, but he's sort of in that same boat as Garrett Whitlock that we talked about earlier, where his role was not set. I mean, at the beginning of the year, it was set in starter, and that was very weird for them to take the hardest throwing pitcher in baseball and put him as a starter. It doesn't make too much sense, but the experiment didn't work out. He's back in the bullpen, and since then, he's been really good. And is that why you're calling him an underperformer? Because it's like the skew of his starting statistics have skewed his season-long numbers, and since he's been back in the bullpen, he's looking like his old self?
Yeah, I think he's been better in the bullpen. He's still I guess he's still having a little bit of bad luck. Yeah, like this is kind of what the theme of the show is. You know, 1.12 whip is something I would consider a pretty good whip for a reliever, especially someone, you know, with his kind of skill set. So to see, I think when I'm trying to pull up his ERA as a reliever is 4.5 for the season. It still feels a little bit high for having a 1.12 whip as a reliever. And you know, I think he's going to be another guy. He's probably not going to close with Helsley and Gallegos there, but someone who, if you're in holds leagues next season, and you know, leagues, especially leagues that you always there's a lot of leagues where you're looking for starter eligible relievers, and Hicks will be one next year after I think he started 6 games this year or something. So yeah, he's definitely going to be a starter eligible, and he should still be in the mix for holds next season. He's actually having a pretty good season for all things considered, because he's always thrown, you know, over 100 miles per hour, but the strikeout rate's always kind of lag behind. And I feel like he's, you know, the strikeout rate's been a little bit better this year for him. 24.4% on the season as reliever. I'm pretty sure that's higher. So I was always kind of put him in like the Bruce Dark Gratterall, you know, like guys who throw hard, get ground balls and don't really get tons of strikeouts because they're you know, pitch to weak contact guys. But you know, his slider's getting whiffs at a 49%, you know, rate. So I think there's, again, with him, there's a little bit more room to kind of get that full breakout season, especially I hope they don't try to, I'm guessing they're not going to put him back in the rotation. I think that's done, but him as a reliever, I'm still like very intrigued by, and that could be a nasty, you know, three-headed monster they have from the seventh inning on with him, Gallegos, and Helsley
next year. Definitely. And he sort of fits in with the last three themes of our podcast, which like second half risers, and then the velocity leaderboards, and then now guys that are underperforming, because he's got elite velocity. He's been better in the second half since he's been in the bullpen, and he has underperformed all season based off a multitude of factors. So yeah, he's striking out nearly 26% of batters in the bullpen, which is, you know, right in line with where he was mm-hmm. at in 2019 when he was striking out 28% of batters, a little bit lower, but that's all right. He, like you said, he's an elite ground ball guy. So he's got sort of everything you look for in a reliever. He just, you know, maybe needs to get more comfortable in that role, stay healthy. It was always a thing with him over the last few seasons is that he just cannot stay healthy. So it really didn't make sense for them to put him in the rotation as a guy that sort of needs to have his innings limited. So it should be interesting to see how he bounces back next year. It's definitely going to be a guy I'm going to watch, but it sort of sucks because, you know, this is like, oh, like just the ideal breakout candidate for next year is like an elite reliever. And then he's just got so much competition.
I know there's no real way. But the thing is he does have closer experience and not just, you know, he's got 20 saves in his career. So, if anything were to happen to, I mean, you never know, the especially if relievers, you know, injuries happen or things happen, they could make some moves. He could find himself in the closer role, you know, rather, you know, quickly. You never know. So definitely someone to keep an eye on, especially with, you know, his pitch mix and how just talented he is.
Definitely. And we'll see if he can keep it rolling through the end of the season to give us even more confidence going into next season. But speaking of seasons, it's football season right now. Boo. talking a lot about RBs. Another RB, Ryan Brazier. I'm just killing it right now. Ryan Brazier of the Boston Red Sox, Rick's team. He's been not too great this season, but maybe he has been from a different number of perspectives. He's got a 6.05 ERA. Rick, why do you even like this guy?
Well, the thing is I don't really. no, I mean, I was at the game the other night and he came in and I was like, oh my God, I just want to leave. I don't want to watch this, but yeah, I'm probably too hard on him considering he's definitely dealt with a lot of bad luck this year. He's probably been one of the more unlucky pitchers. And I think, you know, I was wondering why they haven't DFA'd him and brought up like someone else to add to the bullpen at this point of the season. And they're probably thinking, you know, they have one more year of team control and he has a 3.57 xFIP. So, you know, things have just been, he's got one of the highest ERA to minus FIP, you know, 2.38 ERA minus FIP. You know, differential. So he has been one of the most unlucky pitchers in baseball. He's still, I guess, you know, he doesn't walk anyone. That's always at least a starting point, something, you know, positive to take away. And his slider is, he just hasn't been getting whiffs though this year. That's kind of why, even with the bad luck, it's like he's still very just mediocre ish. And he's not getting younger. He feels like hasn't been around that long, but he's 35 right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, the velocity is still like sitting around 96, which is nice, but we'll see how long that lasts. Yeah, I don't know if he's someone I'm keeping an eye on next year. Cause I really, he's definitely on the roster bubble at best for the Red Sox. And, you know, maybe he needs to go somewhere else where he has a better opportunity, or I'm not too excited about him, especially with his, you know, proclivity to give up very hard, very loud contact. Home runs are definitely a problem. But I don't know. He could, if this thing changes and he gets some good luck on his side, he doesn't have a 350 BABIP and 54.7% left on base percentage. If those numbers go more towards his career average, then he's probably in for a pretty good year. So I guess as someone to monitor as a very deep, you know, deep league roster guy next year, but, you know, just kind of I figured I'd throw him on this list just because of how big the difference was in his definitely ERA and FIP.
That's huge. That must be why the Red Sox are keeping him in. I guess they do actually have access to FanGraphs. maybe opposite of common thought based off how they've been performing this year.
They're one of the more analytical front offices, but yeah.
Kyle Bloom is just scrolling through FanGraphs. It's like, whoa, did you guys see Ryan Brazier's XFIP? It's the same way we are. That's really funny.
Sounds about right. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, definitely one of the lesser known names on the list that we've been talking about, and guy who's not going to have a huge impact fantasy wise. But if he does push those skills over into next season, it will be interesting to see if the, you know, the Red Sox turn it around from having a really shaky bullpen to having one that's actually pretty reliable. But, you know, it really depends on what they do this offseason as well, because they do seem like one of those teams that could just bite the bullet and just sell some guys off with how competitive that division is, with the Orioles rising and everybody else being really good.
No. Well, that's a story for another. No, I don't want that, but that's a story for another day, for definitely, another podcast. Definitely. Yeah.
All right. Well, from your team to my team, we'll go to the Giants. We'll talk about, actually, wow, I got fooled.
Not the Giants.
I got fooled. Gosh, if only
it's
they.
The other one.
Yep. Twin brothers. Taylor Rogers. I'm sure once I said twin brothers, everybody knew who the heck I was talking about. Yeah, I tricked myself. Taylor Rogers of the Milwaukee Brewers. He has switched teams. He was on the Padres. Oh yeah. Wow. He's changed teams a lot in 2022, not just this season, but the entire year. He's been sort of same boat as Hader, in that he started the season off like one of the best relievers in all of baseball, and then he's fallen off in the second half. And that really shows up in the difference between his ERA estimators and his ERA. So tell me why you've got some confidence that Taylor Rogers has underperformed this season.
It's like maybe they shouldn't have been traded for each other.
Yeah.
No, Rogers' issues were starting, you know, they were happening in San Diego as well. So
yeah.
I guess it's been better to get a new change of scenery for him. But he is definitely, when I'm looking at all these bad luck or these bad luck numbers, he shows up in the top 5 or 10 in basically everything this season. I could literally Sierra. He's got a 2.43 Sierra, which is very good. I'll take that. And then, especially, I mean, it just doesn't match up with his 4.45 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
61.2% left on base rate. For, you know, that's definitely low. But yeah, with Rogers, and it's, I mean, talking about the Red Sox bullpen, I would definitely love to see him be, you know, looked at by the Red Sox to. As a potential, you know, he's still going to get paid, but I think he's this season just having the 4.45 ERA, which is like really the only thing that looks bad on his, you know, for his stats this season. It's just that ERA. Everything else looks pretty good, near, you know, 36 point. He's always been a good CSW guy because he gets a ton of called strikes, and that's definitely not a fluke with him. It's been happening throughout his career. He's very good command of the strike zone when he's on. That's, I think, part of the reason why he had a little bit of an issue with San Diego earlier in the season. But yeah, as long as, you know, I don't think he's gonna be closing out games next year, depending on where he lands. There's a few spots where obviously he could end up being the closer, but I think he's gonna kind of be transitioned into the similar role that he has now, as a setup man somewhere, the top left-handed setup man somewhere. And that's going to be, I think, a really good role for him wherever he lands. And for those in holds leagues, he's still, you know, a top 20 holds option for next season, most likely.
Good call. I think all the skills are still intact. If you look at strikeout to walk ratio, which is, you know, one of my favorite stats in terms of pitchers, he's got a top 20 mark among pitchers with at least 50 innings pitched. He's at 25.7% on the strikeout percentage minus walk percentage leaderboard. Mm-hmm. That's very good. He's right in between Max Scherzer and Carlos Rodon. So that's a pretty good company for sure. So he's definitely a guy who strikes out a lot of guys, doesn't walk too many, and doesn't give up too much hard contact. So he's definitely a guy to maintain confidence in going into next season, because, you know, not much has changed from what we thought preseason. I never really thought of him as an elite guy, but I think he's in that second tier of closers if he does end up in that role, if not just like second tier of relievers overall. I think he's really good. He's not like the upper echelon, but he's right next to that. So definitely a guy to keep sticking with through the end of the season, mm-hmm. as well as going into the draft season. So that's a interesting one. And the final guy on this list before we hit a couple honorable mentions, this guy used to be on my team. This is why I was getting tricked, because you got Taylor Rogers right next to Dominic Leone, who was on the Giants just a week ago, and then he got released. And we were both wondering why right before we hit record, and we realized he's about to be a free agent. So I guess the Giants said, hey, you know what? We're not making the playoffs. Why should we pay this guy at all? Poor Dominic. I hope for the best for him. He will probably end up with a new team. And Rick pointed out he's been on so many teams in his career. It's been like, what did you say, 5.5 years, and he's been on 6 teams?
So he's just about ready to hit free agency after his 5th year, and he's already been on 6 teams. That's probably going to be his 7th. So, yeah.
He's been pretty mediocre this season in terms of surface stats. So what has you thinking that he's had an unluckier season?
I think the 1.6 whip is definitely not good. That's not something we want. ERA at 4 is not great, but it's not terrible. And with him, I can't believe, like, I had to like do a double take, but I noticed it the last couple of weeks when I've been looking, is his swinging strike rate this year and his chase rate. He's getting tons of swings and misses. He's getting people to chase. His swinging strike rate is still 6th best in the league at 19.9%, which I don't understand how. I guess if you're not going to bring him back next year, you can look at other guys, but he has a really good slider. His slider is very, 55.3% whiff rate. That's where he gets the bulk of his damage. I think he's going to be an interesting. He probably won't sign. He'll probably sign a 1, maybe 2 year deal, very low money, but definitely someone to keep an eye on, especially depending on where he lands next season, because we've seen kind of glimpses of him being, really good near elite, but he's never really put it all together yet. So I think he just needs a little bit. He needs to work on his fastball command, and that's always. That's kind of where a lot of it starts with a lot of relievers is, fastball command kind of dictates how successful you're going to be. So, that's just, if he can fix that, lower the walks, I think he could be a really good find for a team this offseason. Or now, he's available now. So, yeah. If someone wants to take a chance on him, see what he has the last 2 weeks, and then, go from there. But yeah, definitely someone to keep an eye on, especially with the chase rate at 99th percentile chase rate for him, and that's at 40.4% chase rate. So just really interesting swing and miss metrics there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it is thanks to that slider, which boasts a 30% swinging strike rate, which matches his overall swinging strike rate as the 6th best in baseball. So that's definitely the main attraction coming out of his arm. And that pitch just features a lot of downward movement that you don't usually see from a slider. And I guess it pairs well with his fastball that has a pretty good velocity, I guess. It's not too great of a fastball, but I think if he can maybe even turn to that slider more often, he could, take off more, because it seems like he controls it pretty well. Like I don't have the straight up walk numbers that result from the slider, but he really does get a lot of swings out of the zone with it.
Yeah, and he mixes in the cutter a little bit too, which is, an interesting mix, but something I feel like Evan Phillips kind of went to that fastball slider cutter mix. I think that's him who I was looking at the other day, and it's become an interesting thing with the guys who have good sliders. How do they get lefties out? Well, a cutter can be a very effective tool against lefties, especially if you can command it, get in on the hands. And let me see. Yeah, Leone's been using his cutter mostly against righties. So I wonder if like a little bit of a pitch mix change, similar to how Evan Phillips has pitched this year, would do Leone some help.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he lands with like a rebuilding team in the next couple of weeks, or do you think he signs with a playoff bound team?
Well, he can't be on the playoff roster, but...
Oh, true. I didn't even think about that. That was like the Jose Iglesias on the Red Sox last year, huh?
Yeah, so I wonder... You know, it's like one of those... I wonder, like, I feel like for whatever reason, I feel like the Brewers are gonna, like, be in the mix. They seem to be always looking for relief help. And maybe just to see what he has for this year and possibly sign him, you know, to an extent, to a longer 1 or 2 year deal after the season. But yeah, I don't think he signs with a contender. Maybe though. I mean, you know, like a team, the Yankees are starting to get pieces back, but you know that at one point they really were hurting for bullpen help. So this guy is at least a major league reliever who has experience. So it'd be interesting to see if he signs, where he signs, and or if he signs at this point, you know, this late in the year.
All right. So the two guys that we have as honorable mentions are Joely Rodriguez and Jonathan Loaisiga, two guys on the Yankees. Who do you like most out of these, and why do you have these guys as honorable mentions on the list of underperformers?
I think Loaisiga has been better lately. I'm definitely... I think he's starting to, you know, turn a corner and be the guy he was last year. Someone to, again, talk about holds leagues. He was someone I had really high entering the season. Hasn't worked out, but next year might be able to get a little bit of a discount on him. And pitches for, you know, a team that's going to provide you a lot of hold, with a lot of holds chances. Joely Rodriguez is a little bit, he's been kind of really bad this year for the Mets, going from the Yankees to the Mets. But again, he's had some bad luck as well. I liked him going back to when he was in Texas, and I think, is he a free agent? He might be. I don't know, but he's someone definitely to keep. He's had a bit of a walk rate issue this year. He has some, 30. Yeah, I mean, it's just been a little bit of bad luck all around the board for him. I think he's better than this, and depending on where he lands next year, especially when left-handed relievers are sometimes hard to find quality ones. So he could be a steal for either a fantasy manager really late in holds leagues and drafts, or for, you know, any MLB team looking to bolster the bullpen with a left-handed reliever.
Good point. And I'd like to correct myself. I said both of these guys are on the Yankees. They're both on New York teams. So
New York, yeah.
So close enough. Close enough. But yeah, those are the guys that we targeted as guys that have been underperforming throughout the season. I'll read over those again just in case you missed one or two. And here they are: Lou Trevino, Emilio Pagan, Joe Kelly, Josh Hader, Jordan Hicks, Ryan Brazier, Taylor Rogers, Dominic Leone, and honorable mentions Joely Rodriguez and Jonathan Loaisiga. Now we're going to hit the last segment of the podcast, where we talk about which bullpens we're going to be looking out for through the next week until our next podcast. Rick, which teams are you going to be watching? Which bullpens?
Not a lot has changed this week. So I'm guessing, you know, I definitely want to see what's going on in Atlanta, if Jansen can hang on there. Philadelphia as well, see if Robertson's still closing out games a week from now, or if they give Sir Anthony a chance, you know, to get his job back there. Minnesota is still one where, like, Jorge Lopez has struggled, and I don't know. They seem to be falling. They're really kind of falling out of the playoff picture. So I don't know what they're going to do as far as the whole roster goes or team goes for the rest of the year. And there's another one. I'll think about it. Who are you looking for this week?
Well, I was surprised you didn't say the Red Sox. I think it's pretty interesting to see what Barnes does if he's the one to take over the role there. But that's one that's going to be probably in flux through the rest of the season. I would be very surprised if within the next like 3 weeks they settle on one guy. That would be pretty interesting. But yeah, that's definitely one I'll be keeping an eye on for. There was one more that I was, the Marlins also. I think that's going to be an interesting one because Scott had the closer role for the majority of the season, and now it just seems like they've lost their love for him or whatever they had before. So it'll be interesting to see who takes over there.
Yeah, and my other one was, and I kind of wanted to mention him earlier, I forgot, but Craig Kimbrell in LA. Mm-hmm. I had him, I moved him up the list this week because I felt like he was starting to, he was going to, you know, take, he had a save September 6th. No one else in that team is really, they haven't had a lot of save opportunities for as well as they've been, as well they've been playing. So I thought Kimbrell was going to, you know, jump back in as the closer there, and then he gets a shot the other night and allows a walk-off home run to not Sandy Alcantara, Sergio Alcantara. Yeah. And yeah, just got to wonder, you know, how confident can they be in him? They're 2 weeks away from 3 weeks away from the playoffs. How confident can they be? Are they in him? I mean, he had been pitching better, but, and that was actually his first hit that he's allowed. That's the first hit he's allowed since August 17th.
Wow.
But that's great. But he also hasn't been, you know, striking out anyone, which is very weird for Craig Kimbrell. You know, even when he's been bad, he's usually still missing bats and getting strikeouts. So he only has 5 strikeouts since August 16th or 17th. Yeah, 17th. So, I mean, that's over, you know, almost, I think, 7-plus innings or 8 innings. So it's been a weird season for him. And I just, you know, Blake Treinen's hurt again. That team has been so good this season, and I just don't know how that bullpen's going to hold up in October.
Yeah, we might see a lot of Evan Phillips in October and November. That's for sure. He's going to probably be relied upon a lot. And the rest of the, I don't want to say misfits, but they sort of are just a bunch of random dudes out there. Caleb Ferguson, Alex Vesia, Chris Martin. It'll be interesting to see if they can carry the load that Kimbrell has dropped.
Martin and Vesia definitely pitched better lately. Those two guys might be the unheralded, relievers that kind of save them and keep their chances alive, because I don't know what else they're going to be able to turn to. And I don't think Clayton Kershaw and they have pretty good starters, but those guys have been dealing with injuries too. I don't know if they're going to be able to go 7 or 8 innings every time out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wrote about Vesia, I think last week in the reliever ranks, about how he's been just one of the most underrated elite relievers in baseball since he came to the Dodgers. In 87 and 2/3 innings across the last two seasons, which were his age 25 and 26 seasons, he's pitched to a 2.25 ERA with a, this looks like a 34.1% strikeout rate. And that's elite. If I've ever heard that, he's been really incredible. And I don't think you hear anybody talking about him, and he's still super young. So this is really, you know, one of the up and coming relievers in baseball. He doesn't throw super hard, but it doesn't really matter. They're getting the most out of him. And so it's going to be interesting to see him and Phillips being like the two big guys out in LA. And people are going to be like, well, who are these guys?
Right. Oh, they got Tommy Conley back too. He's another guy. If he stays healthy, he's definitely a very good reliever. So they could be. Yeah. And Chris Martin's pitched well, surprisingly. So they might be all right, but it's just, how much are they going to be able to rely on Kimbrell is definitely one of my biggest question for them heading into the playoffs.
Good call. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Independent Podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and link your socials and anything else you've got going on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @IamRickGraham. I'm still plugging away with holds rankings, closer rankings, all the way up through the end of the season. So we got a couple more weeks left of that, and then the off season begins and the off season work begins. But that's about it.
Yes, it is a year-round job, so you'll definitely be hearing from us from time to time, maybe not every week, but at least, you know, once a month, every other week or so in the off season, we'll be giving you some updates, given doing some season recaps and that kind of stuff. But you can follow me at Jake Crumpler on the Twitter, and you can find me writing for Pitcher List, writing the reliever ranks twice a week, and also doing playing time analysis over at Baseball HQ. But do you have any last words before we send the fans home happy?
I don't think so. I think that's next week, though. Next week, we're going to be going over the overperformers. So if you like the underperformers, we'll go over some guys who have overperformed their X stats next week.
And if not, go watch football or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, talk to you next week.